This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Okay, and we here live here on Pet Life Radio. I just sent my Instagram to my friends and followers that I'm starting our show here on Sunday morning. Happy Sunday, happy Easter. My life with corgis. Eloise, hello, hello. Eloise, we need to talk about a trainer for a situation that have. And anyway, once again, here for you, here for your pets. You know the drill. Anything you need, now's the time to ask. As I said, as we get more people, I'll again wish everybody, those following, a nice happy Easter Sunday. And for us, it's a happy Sunday. So we got it all covered. So anyway, my new little grandson is just over about a week and a half old already. It's amazing. And had him over for dinner, and it's really, really cute. And my crazy nut daughter, as I mentioned, I think last show, she decided to give birth by herself. Any moms out there know how crazy she is? She likes to use a midwife. She doesn't go to the hospital because she's crazy. It's like I tell her all the time, Shane, you're nuts. You're basically battling the odds. You got three good ones now, but you never know. You can do the same thing at a hospital. The hospitals now have these birthing rooms where you can do the same thing you do at home. You can do it in the water. You can do it, but at least you're at the hospital. No. And as I mentioned, so her midwife wasn't there in time. She has her 7-year-old son fill up the tub, and she goes ahead and she delivers this baby all by herself. And the midwife got there 6 minutes late. And this time, all she did was clamp the umbilical cord. And my older grandson, cut the cord. And fortunately, everything worked out well. And this is the third time she's done this. And it drives me nuts. I'd be afraid to be there because if something happened, I'd be so bummed. And anyway, but mom and baby are doing great, and he's really cute. It's, you know what it's like. When you have an infant, you really can't tell yet. I mean, maybe that's a terrible thing to say, but if you look at her older boys, he's going to be adorable. So at least I can say that with confidence. So anyway, any questions you may have, a couple of things I wanted to talk about. And one thing is we're seeing a lot of, and I know, I'm curious to know your take, and that is this, AI. How often do you use it? When you use it, or for what are you using it for, is it accurate? Is it of benefit? Have you ever found it not to be accurate, bad advice? Because what's happening is we're seeing this in the human side of medicine. And whenever something happens on the human side, I know it's going to happen the veterinary side. So it's like, what would one look for? How do you gain that confidence that what you're asking about is real? Are you going to listen to it? And who's monitoring it? So these are all things that always concern me. So I don't know. I'm even working on maybe something that we have to get some sort of uniformed type of body, governing body that makes sure that what we're seeing, Alexia, how are you? What we're seeing, so Alexia, you should chime in on this one. Okay. And that is Alexia is going for her nurse practitioner. And when you guys, or have you used AI? Have your doctors that you work with used AI? Do your patients use AI? And as if they have all the answers now because they got it from AI, it's got to be right, right? And the answer is no, maybe not. So if any of you have had experiences with AI, even the good stuff, I mean, sometimes I'll put some things in there that are so esoteric. And not only does it finally come with an answer, but it's so fast. Even if you had all the volumes of the right answers that you have to go through, you can't do it. It will take you an hour. This takes seconds. It's great. So from Eloise's concern, because again, an opinion, not sure whether it's coming from, right. So like for writing a description, yes, it's helpful. But when you're asking specific questions about a disease, I just don't know. I'd be very cautious because so many of the things, that's why I love telemedicine. At least with telemedicine, we can see the patient. We can ask the right questions. It's one thing to get a pre-canned response to something, even though it's done with AI and it's very likely is accurate, but you don't have a chance to say, but what if this, or how about this, or take a look at this. It may sound like it's the right thing. It may sound legit, but it can't see the patient. It can't see that eye. It can't see that lesion. You know, when you say, my dog has a growth on its body, should I be worried? You know, I don't know. Maybe that's one to go test and see. There are so many factors involved to know whether this is something that is something needs to be done or not. So I'd be curious. Those of you who have used it for medical things, don't be shy. Let me know what your thoughts are. So this week, interestingly, so Friday, I had to leave the hospital. Excuse me, not Friday. It was Wednesday. I booked myself kind of half a day. I usually leave Wednesday early on Wednesdays. And I'm getting ready to leave, 2 o'clock-ish. And I get a call from a very dear friend, client, who his French bulldog, who was really not even due, we thought maybe till Sunday, was ready to pop. And he shows me the video again, telemedicine. It's great. And this dog is really panting. So take his temperature. Her temperature was 99.3 or something. That's a concern. So here we go. Panting dog. Now I'm about to walk out of the hospital. So, and I had a heart out. And I said, okay, maybe we're, you know, he lives in the Valley. So maybe you should take him to another friend of mine hospital out there. It's a large hospital. They have many doctors. They're usually open on the weekends. So I said, okay, why don't you go there? And he's like mad at me that I can't see him. So, okay, I'll tell you what. So one of my associates there and says, doc, I could take care of it. And he could. So anyway, P.S., I feel guilty not being there. So I wait. He gets there. Sure enough, this dog is ready. She is ready. We thought she had 2 to 3 pups based on ultrasound. So we couldn't tell for sure. There was one questionable one. And so we figured, okay, we'll say 3. So I stay, of course, because it's me. And we anesthetize her. We open her up. And these puppies, first of all, were huge. And secondly, there was one that was like stuck in the birth canal. So because of all the other structures there, we really didn't get a good look. She had 4 Frenchie puppies, absolutely adorable. 3 of them were really, really good size. And one was like probably like the runt. And so this was all on Wednesday. They basically, if everything went well, she'd be fine. Sure enough, everything is great. I've been in touch with them. They sent me a video last night of mom. The puppies are nursing. She's making sure they're all there. She's picking them up and moving. It was so cute how she knew what to do. We did elect, and because of the condition of, well, her condition, not to mention how long she'd been really panting, we didn't want to have this surgery take longer. We spayed her at the same time. I'm sure most of you out there would be happy we did that. And I'm happy we did that as well, because I just didn't want her to go through this again. And look, it's funny. I know women have had C-sections and they say, well, no, after a C-section, you can have another baby. But they give to scare you. I don't know whether it's a scare tactic or not. Again, Alexi, if you're still there, you can chime in. They say that if you have a natural birth after C-section, the tissue where you sewed up the uterus from the C-section is not as strong as tissue. And they run the risk. This is what they say. I don't know if it's true or not, because we don't do it. It's really in veterinary medicine. But they run the risk of tearing an elbow or a knee or a foot, ends up rubbing right against that area that the first birth was, where the C-section was done, sutured up the uterus, and it would tear. I don't know if that's true or not. And I'd love someone who's in the medical world to chime in. All right, Eloise, first of all, why do dogs get fatty tumors? Where do they come from? Well, them the name. They're fat. So their depositions of fat, why it happens, I don't really know. I will tell you that there seems to be a really big breed predilection. I have my Labradors, as you know. I rarely have an old lab that doesn't get lipomas. Now, most of them are lipomas. Lipomas are benign. You can leave them. So if I have an older dog with lipoma, if the lipomas, right now, my almost 15-year-old Labrador, I am not going to remove his lipomas because there are areas that it doesn't matter. And they're kind of big, but they're not causing a problem. Now, my mom had an old Doberman that it had one under the arm and it kept growing and growing. And she was 13 and then she was 14 and 15. By this time, it was so big, she couldn't put her arm down. I finally went in and did the surgery. So it comes down to 2 things. It comes down to the size of the tumor, the function, is function being affected? And so location is a big issue for me. If it's getting, if it's a younger dog and I'm already anesthetizing them for a better reason, like maybe a dentistry or something, then yes, if there's a tumor and it's a nuisance, I'll remove it. biopsy it. Very rarely, some of these things are not, you think they're a lipoma, but they come back as liposarcoma, and those are malignant. So I had one recently that was in and around muscle. We did an aspirate. We saw some really funny looking cells. So we sent it to the pathologist, and pathologist said, no, those are just kind of weird muscle cells, and everything. They read it as a benign lipoma. So it's in a weird place anyway. We'd have to really cut through muscle to get to it. And it's not causing a problem. It's been there, hasn't been growing that much. They said it's been probably the same for 2 years. I'm just going to leave it. All right. I go by your rule. If panting of a dog is panting from the front tongue forward, it's time to get home and sit and slow down. If the tongue is laying down the side, I get concerned. Is that right? I mean, there are so many different theories about, you know, what to do. This dog, it was panting, but it went on for a long time. He sent me a video of the dog probably about a half hour before, and she seemed uncomfortable, but panting. It was a little early. And I said, look, give it a little time. Give her some water. Let her relax. She didn't relax. And I said, okay, look, we're going to 2 days. I wasn't going to be there on Thursday or Friday. So I said, you know what? Come now. He did. I waited. And it was a good thing. There was no way she was delivering this by herself. No way. And if we waited longer, it could have been a big problem and potentially lost all the puppies. So when it comes to those breeds, like the French Bulldogs and Bulldogs that often need C-sections, then you got to jump on it. You're better off doing it a day or so early than waiting a day or two too long, because that can mean the puppies themselves, are they going to make it or not? A Frenchie I work with, 10 minutes of training, he's constantly panting. Is that concerning? Well, you know, we just had another Frenchie this week that was like 5 years old, and it was literally, I mean, this poor dog, any exertion, it has turned blue before. And I said to him, why are we waiting so long? It's a French bulldog. They need the nares. The nose was so clumpy. He couldn't breathe through its nose. Couldn't breathe through its throat. It was like terrible. So we finally convinced him we have to do the soft palate. We did the nares. I got to tell you, we opened up the glottis, and the tissue around the glottis was so inflamed because of this dog's, poor dog, struggling to breathe on a regular basis, daily. So I did a fairly good size reduction of that palate. Hey, JB, of the soft palate. And thank you, JB. So that he actually called us. First of all, recovering from anesthesia was the first time that I noticed this dog closed mouth breathing, very calm through the nose. I was shocked. Then I said, okay, don't be so fast to pat yourself on the back, Werber, because it could be just because he was still a bit sedated from the anesthesia. So, okay, good. That is true. He was just calm because he wasn't panicked, because he was still quasi-anesthetized. He was sedated, at least. So anyway, we talked to him the next day. He said this was the first night in so long, that they got a full night's sleep. They didn't have to get up with him at all because they was worried about, is he alive? That is success. To me, when we get to do things like that for a patient and we literally get to change their lives, oh my God, that is the best thing ever. So I tell people all the time, if you have French Bulldogs and they're having breathing issues, don't hesitate. Get them checked out. And I usually, in my hospital, there's a rule that anytime a French Bulldog is anesthetized, I personally have to do the intubation. Okay? A lot of times the nurses can do it. It's not that difficult, but I have to do it because I need to evaluate that soft palate and the back of the throat and the tonsils. And that's a decision that the experienced doctor has to make. So that's our rule. And I have picked many, and I've gotten many on the phone. They thought they were coming in for just a spay or neuter, or they're coming in for just a dentistry. And I say, no, we are anesthetizing. This soft palate needs to be reduced. These nares need to be fixed. And we go ahead and do it. What's the difference between Clavamox-Betro combo versus Clavamox-Xanaquin for pneumonia? So, well, you know, when it comes, hello, Sharon, how you doing? So we have a Shannon and a Sharon. So the difference really is the Clavamox-Xanaquin, okay, is just another type of quinolone. So it really depends on what kind of bugs you think you're dealing with. They're really not that different. Betrol and rifloxacin, Xanaquin. So the whole idea when you're dealing with pneumonias, there's another one in there that I often use, and that's, I find, is good for respiratory as well, and that's doxycycline. So the one thing about the quinolones is that they end up getting deeper into the tissue. So that's one of the reasons why they're really good for respiratory disease. Clavamox, I think, is also good. I love Clavamox. Interestingly, however, I've seen a number of dogs that get this GI sensitivity to Clavamox. Why? I don't know. For cats? For A, because it also has a liquid option, an option to get in a Clavamox liquid, Clavamox drops. Cats seem to tolerate it really, really well, and I love it for cats. I love anything for cats. It's easy to give. And cats are almost impossible to pill. That's why, for many, many cat problems, infections, I love giving the Convenia, because it's so darn convenient. But the problem is that for deep respiratory infection, they say, because it doesn't work well for respiratory infection. Now, I should say deep respiratory infections, lungs. So for URIs, I've seen it work pretty well. Again, it's not my first choice, not my fave. But if I have a cat that's impossible to medicate, both for me and for the owners, then we're going to probably go with either something injectable. But we have to teach the owners how to give a shot to a cat. Can you imagine how many of you, raise show of hands, have refractory cats who just don't like being messed with? Well, I got to tell you, I mean, I can show you scratch after scratch, scratch. Cats, first of all, they are really fast. They are really fast. And so a lot of times I will trim nails. I don't charge the owner for it because I say, it's not for you. This is for me. This is for my staff. If I'm going to start working on this cat, he's got to have short nails because they are like claws, they're talons sometimes. So anyway, so I don't think there's a big difference. Xenoquin is more expensive, but I think either one would be good. But really, when it comes to pneumonia, sometimes you don't even know what the bugs are. And then to start getting samples, that might be more invasive for pets to have to do. So you just have to pick good meds off the shelf that historically have been effective against pneumonias. Okay. 11, healthy, active, but recently noticed his back or front leg shaking. Is he in pain or time for Librela? So what I see also, first of all, I'm using Librela right now on my old Labrador. And I discuss it with people that there is a lot of negative out there. In my hands, or I said in our hospital, we have had none of these negative reactions. My dog, and now admittedly, I've only used it once. He's time for a second shot. Noticeable difference. Noticeably more comfortable. Better going upstairs. So I'm going to give him another shot. I did have one patient that after the fourth shot had a bit of a reaction, but we can't prove that it was because of that. You know, older dogs, that's another thing. Older dogs are going to have problems. I remember the first case that hit the news about Librela and how terrible it was because this dog died the day after Zoetis, the company, actually paid for a totally independent university autopsy. They wanted to know really what happened. Was it or was it not? They opened this dog up. It was a ruptured spleen. Because of a splenic tumor, you don't get a splenic tumor that ruptures in a day. It had nothing to do with the injection. This dog would have ruptured that spleen and died anyway. But that's the kind of things that happen. Everything gets blamed on this new thing. And in fact, it's really nothing. It's not their fault at all. So pain, shaking, you know, there is something called muscle fatigue. At least old dogs, if they stand in one spot, or even when they're, usually don't see it when they're walking because they can't shake, they can't move and you notice the shake at the same time. But it's usually when they're just standing, all of a sudden you'll see the muscle twitching. So could it be something neurologic? Yes. It's usually just the muscle fatigue. If we thought it was muscle related, we can put them on methocarbamol, which is a muscle relaxant, and see if that helps. It's usually not a very serious thing. If everything else is normal and they're able to walk and they get up from lying down, they go up and downstairs, then most likely I'm not that concerned. If there are other neurologic problems that we're seeing, then it should be worked up. Oh, good. I'm glad the Talisin worked. All right. So let me take this quick opportunity to break. And it's 9:20, 9:21 to be exact. And we'll be back after these short messages from our sponsors here on Pet Life Radio. And for you here on Instagram, stick around as soon as I'm going to mute myself, however you like to say it. And we will be back in a few minutes from Pet Life Radio, but we will continue right here.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back. We're back here live on Pet Life Radio as well. So we're talking about who is going to be replaced by AI. Now, I know that speaking to an attorney friend of mine, you know, you have these legal assistants. And what are they doing? They're doing all this research. Well, guess what? Hey, buddy, love to have you here, but we have some really, really good ChatGPT, and it's been very accurate and helpful to us. So I wonder if this is what's going to happen in many, many fields, including medicine. So again, it may not replace, but it certainly could enhance the speed and the efficiency of a hospital staff. To be able to find things out right away without going to the library, without going online to do it yourself, just go to, you know, one of the AI platforms and just get an answer like that. But it's got to be an answer you trust. A client washes her dog once every few months. It's better to wash the dog once a month. You know, it depends on a lot of things. I just talked to a client 2 days ago, 3 days ago, that is washing her dog every 2 weeks. Wants to know if she should start doing it every week. And I worry, first of all, it depends on a lot on the dog. A lot of dogs actually like being bathed. And there's some dogs that live outside, spend most of the day outside, running around in the mud, go into the dog park. They get really dirty. If a dog, because of being soiled, needs to be bathed, then bathe them. That's okay. Now, as a routine, they're not noticeably dirty. Just because you are possibly a kind of a clean freak yourselves and you want to bathe, I would say once a month would be probably okay for most dogs. Again, it is so individualized. It depends on the dog. It depends on the length of the coat. It depends on how active the dog is, where it plays, how dirty it gets. And if you want to be once every other week, that's okay. But use really mild shampoos, because what happens is too much bathing dries out the natural skin oils. Then these dogs start getting dry, flaky skin, and that's not good either. Now, for AI, very concerning. We still need human beings to do that. No, look, I kind of agree there that we do need the human being touch. I think there are things that, like with everything, as I said, I have my telemedicine platform, AirVet, and I tell clients all the time that this is what I think is going on. This is what I'm seeing. This is from the history you're telling me this. But if we're not sure, things aren't happening fast enough. If you're trying our suggestions and they don't work within a day or 2 days, you start seeing improvement. Or if the pet is getting worse despite it all, you need to get them in right away. And I agree then. You need to have a hands-on exam with a doctor who knows what he or she is doing. And that's what we have to do. Hello, Cozy Vet. So you just joined on. We're talking about AI. You know how much you would trust AI for your clients, your patients, and if for what kind of problem. And I'm just curious if you've used AI for your own research, checking up a problem and how accurate it was. I find that some of these things are really, really accurate, but it's like going online. You can go onto a search engine and type in your question. And I do it all the time just to get a feel for where, you know, kind of direct me. And it's pretty accurate. You could see it goes through the research. It goes through the different journals. If I'm looking for a dose of something, it will, you know, again, I don't keep my plums with me all the time. I know everybody has a plum on the phone. I'm old fashioned. I don't. I probably should, but you don't really need it now because you can just go online and put in, you know, your question about the drug, the dose, and the patient, whatever, what's going on, and it gives you some really good suggestions. So that's what I do. Any other vets? So we did have a nurse practitioner online. So I would like to see what she thinks. And hello, hello, all of you joining. Thank you so much. So the reason I ask is that I'm already seeing this in regular medicine. I don't know what impact it's going to have. Is it going to be a negative impact on doctors, or is it going to be a positive impact? Because AI cannot see the patient. And if there's something going on and it gives you the AI response, and ultimately it says you need to see your doctor to differentiate between X, Y, and Z, then that actually could be beneficial. Because I will tell you, there are a lot of people out there that don't know that they need a doctor. And this is where you see something, they will go just online to do some checking things. They get an answer, they think, okay, that's fine. And I get that a lot as well. And a lot of times I'll agree that right now, yes, you can give it a day or two, follow those recommendations. But if we're not improving, then you need to see your doc. And that's sort of how I handle. We have a black, white, and gray cases they see on AirVet. So I'll see a case that is 100%, hang up the phone, get to your doctor now. A bloat, for example, a big gash, bleeding wound, an eye, proptosed eye. There are some things that are medical emergencies, need to be seen right now. Then you have ones that are, oh, no, no, that's nothing. That's a wart, nothing to worry about. You know, when next time you go to your doc, or you're going to have a dentistry or some minor procedure, take it off at the same time. Just know that if the dog scratches at it, it might bleed, but it's not an emergency by any means. Then you have the gray. The gray is the area where it could be in the middle. So it's not like emergent, doesn't need to be seen this second. However, what I may do is say, I'll tell you what, I want you to try this, you know, a little bit here, try this, try that. Give it a day, give it a half a day, give it 2 hours, whatever it is. If we're not improved, then you go on to our case. We have something called open cases. They can reach me or the same doctor they spoke to initially, give them the update, and then doctor can say, you know what? We need to have you take a look at that. You need to go to your vet or go to an emergency. Eloise, does chlorine in a swimming pool cause skin problems for dogs? Well, first of all, it depends how much the chlorine, how strong it is. Hey, Michelle, how strong the chlorine is, it all depends on also when was it put in? So a lot of times, if it's fresh, freshly chlorinated, you know, the pool man just came, loaded up, then I would probably wait a day or two before they swim again. I use, anyhow, the pup's doing. Well, we just talked about them. We just talked about them. Are they all doing well? I hope they are. And the video you sent, they look great. And mom was doing really well. So our pool is salinated. So we switched over to salt water instead of chlorine. They still put a little bit of chlorine in, but I kind of like it better. And my dog, well, unfortunately, my lab, who was an avid swimmer, you couldn't keep him out of the pool. Now it's hard to get him in only because of his age. I have to be there with him. He loves to swim, but he's, you know, usually dog is healthy. His body position of water is like this because his back legs are keeping the butt up and he's swimming with the front legs. It's perfect. But now he's like this in the water. And you get his front legs are flopping. His back legs don't have the strength anymore. So I have to kind of be there with him to help support him. But there's, I don't think a Labrador will ever not love the water. So anyway, he's great. So Eni, doing well. Good. The pups are well. Fred, that's the dad, exhausted. But they're all well. Good. Look, I warned them that when you have little puppies like this, until they really get through the first 2 or 3 weeks, 4 weeks better when they're weaned, then it's work. It's hard work. You're going to not get a lot of sleep, I'll tell you that, because someone's got to be up every 2 hours, 3 hours maybe in another maybe week or 3 or 4 days. I'll be up. You can wait 3 hours, but this is what's going to happen. And I'm sure you told them, and I've told them too. And they're sitting there thinking, okay, now she has the puppies. We're done. No, now it's just starting. You didn't have to do anything while she was pregnant before she was had her C-section. Now you have to do pretty much everything. So no, it's always... you got to think twice. Breeding is not for the faint of heart. You really need to know what you're doing. And this is probably why most of us, the veterinary professionals, are telling people, unless you are a seasoned breeder, save breeding for the breeders. Otherwise, get your dogs fixed. Don't worry about it. If you want another dog, I tell you, you go to a shelter, you go to a rescue, you can have your choice of hundreds. That's the sad part. We need to do more adopting and less breeding. But they are really cute. I'll tell you. You know, it's funny. I get pooped on every time I do a post with a cute little puppy, if it's a pure breed. If it's an adopted dog or even a pure breed from an adoption or rescue, oh, I get kudos. But if I'm just happen to comment that this beautifully bred pure breed dog is adorable and cute as hell, then I'm getting yelled at by some of you people out there as if I was the one that bred the dog or I'm the one that condoned the breeding. No, that's not the case. But just because it was a bred dog and is beautiful doesn't mean it's not beautiful. It doesn't make it ugly. So sorry about that, but that's the way it is. Very handsome husky if anyone was interested in adopting. Yes, you do. Adorable husky. So, oh, I mean, that's a thing. I work with a number of rescues. Eloise is one of them. And I work with WAGS and Angel City Pits. There are a number of rescues out there I'm working with. As you know, I'm one of the vets for Vanderpump. See a lot of their dogs. And, you know, I do, I think, plenty of good work when it comes to rescues. But it doesn't mean what you expect me not to treat a dog because it was a pure breed, bred from a breeder, right? That's ridiculous. So anyway, enough of my soapbox. Okay, anyway, it's that time. We have to say goodbye. Have a great Sunday. Have a great Easter for all of you. We will be back next Sunday. If you have any questions during the week, I say this all the time, write them to me. You can reach me here, worbs_DVM on Instagram. You can write me, drjeff@petliferadio.com, and get me the questions. I'd be happy to answer them. And if they're really good ones, I'm sure they are, I probably, even though I may answer you if I think it's urgent, but I'm going to share the question at our next show next week, the week after that, etc. So don't be bashful. Don't be afraid to ask. And that's how you're going to get your, well, thank you so much, Eloise. And thank you, Ina, you too. And I'm glad it worked out. You know, look, I'm glad I stayed at the end of the day because first of all, bringing these puppies out with lives, having come out healthy, they all survived. To me, that's why what I do is why I love it so much. So anyway, we'll see you guys next week. Be well.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.